Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello.
Hello, Shireen.
This is... Fuck, I do this every time.
Say, this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm a professional. Okay, today is a very amazing, informative, every minute matters. It's a little bit longer, but it's worth every second. We're with Joey Cliff today.
Yes, he's a comedian, writer. You're a registered member of the Cowlitz.
Oh, the term is enrolled. Registered
enrolled.
Is for horses.
You're right. Yeah, enrolled, yeah. Member of the Cowlitz tribe.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We talk about his life on a reservation, leaving the reservation, going to university, how he realized he wanted to be a comic, and so much more. It's a really amazing conversation about what it means to be marginalized, especially as a native in this country, and so much more. So please stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. This is... God, you already said hi, Shireen. My name... This is how our show starts.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous, and we have a very special guest today.
We do.
I just met you about 2 minutes ago, our guest.
Are you talking to me?
I'm looking... Oh, yeah. And Anna. But it's Joey Cliff!
Yeah, yes. Hey, whoa, it's me.
He's in the room.
Yeah, we met closer to 10 minutes ago.
I did give you water.
Yeah, you gave me water. Yeah. We did bits about the timer.
Yeah. Well, okay, 10
minutes.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
chums at this
oh,
point.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We go way back.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
You're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You're...
A filmmaker.
Yeah, a filmmaker.
Your podcast guest.
Yeah, I feel
is that
like
the
I,
most common thing now.
Yeah, I feel like I should just put that on my Twitter bio. Yeah. I was like, I'm a good podcast guest.
Yeah,
yeah,
great podcast guest.
Honestly, at this point, it's good to know. You know,
it yeah, is right, true. Right.
Like
yeah.
our
it's very true.
Our friend and iHeart buddy, Dan, DJ Dan. We mentioned that you were our guest today, and he was like, "Great guest!"
Oh, awesome. Great!
And I was, yeah, that's a raving review. I was excited already.
It is. This is probably the most inside comedy nerd way to start this interview. But I've started to think about like, oh, just like I have a website, which I already feel so old school. But it's like, oh, should I have a podcast section of my website that's just like, here's podcasts I've
yes,
been on?
I have that yes. actually.
Yeah,
I mean, it feels important.
It took me a long time to compile it, but.
Right.
Now I have a list of everything I've guested on.
Right. I think you should.
And it's
yeah.
really helpful.
Yeah.
You know?
The way that I know that my website needs to be updated is I created a Facebook group for LA comedians to share pictures of their cats. And it's right now it's got like 11,000, 12,000 members. And I think that my website, the last time I updated it, we had like 7,000 members. So oftentimes when I'm on podcasts, people will like look at my website and they'll say, like, he's the creator of the LA Underground Cat Network, 7,000 members strong. And I'll have to be like, well, give me more respect than that.
Yeah, that's your claim to fame.
Yeah. That's my one. That being a podcast guest and being a cat guy are my two things.
I mean, not bad things. Yeah. Let's get into you a little bit. I'm going to get to know you the same way our audience is going to get to know you, because I know little to no things about
Great.
You. Other than what I did Google about 20 minutes ago.
great.
10 minutes before you met him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get into your background. What are you, Joey?
So I'm Native American. I'm an enrolled member of the Cowlitz Indian Tribe. Our Aboriginal land is like Southern Washington State, like Mount St. Helens is sort of our area. We actually just opened up a very nice casino about 20 minutes north of Portland, Oregon. So shout out to Alani. That means sing in the Cowlitz language.
Oh.
And I grew up on the Tulalip Reservation, which is about like 45 minutes north of Seattle on I-5. Mm. And not for any like cultural reason, just like my mom was kind of a wild child growing up. So I think the second she turned 18, she was like, I don't want to live near my parents.
Mm.
So that's like kind of my tribe is Southern Washington, but I like grew up on a reservation in like kind of like central Northern Washington a little bit.
Oh, so your mom left her parents and moved to a reservation
exactly.
to be like, this is my new thing.
Yeah. I think it was just like, oh, the rent is cheap here. I don't think she moved to another reservation for like cultural reasons.
Yeah.
How did your parents meet? Are they different tribes or same tribe?
My dad's not native. He's an East Coast guy. I think Boston. He's not from Boston. He's from the Rhode Island area, kind of near Providence. And he's just like such a like. It's so interesting talking to my West Coast family. Which is like, I don't know, it's like you can kind of feel the native talking to them. It's just even like the way they talk to each other and the way that we communicate. It's like a very like native way of communicating. But like my dad's side of my family is just like the loudest East Coast, like near New Yorkers possible.
When you say like a native way of talking, can you elaborate on what that means?
So it's just like, I don't know, it's like there's a lot of, I guess I would say like passive aggressive comments about colonialization. So I'd say that that's like probably the biggest native code switching thing.
Right.
And it's also, I think, just like quieter. I guess it's like quieter compared to like loud East Coasters.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess that would probably be like the, you know, it's more patient.
Mm.
Yeah.
Huh.
Did your mom get any shit on her side of the family for marrying a colonizer? I assume that she married him.
Yeah. I don't think that there was really a ton of, I don't think that there was a ton of, like, drama there. There definitely is, like, a case with, like, some Native peoples about that stuff. Like, my tribe, oftentimes where the strife comes from is that some tribes, there's, like, 570 plus different federally recognized tribes, 100 more at the state level, a bunch more that aren't federally recognized. And, some tribes decide on if you're like an enrolled member of the tribe by what's called blood quantum, which is that's when you get into like 1/8, 1/16,
right.
Stuff like that. And yeah, it's like kind of a problematic way to like do things for a lot of reasons, because it's like the U.S. government came up with like blood quantum laws. I forget, like there was some act that was signed in like 1870 or something that was like the goal of it was that like, okay, if we make tribal affiliations and tribal enrollment dictated by blood quantum at a certain point, all the tribes will just be so like breeded into the population that there won't be tribes.
Right.
So
it's kind of, that's unsettling.
Oh yeah. It's just, I mean, I like, oh, like let's get started about native.
It's dark, man.
Yeah. That's like a lot of, I mean, that is a lot of like straight up like genocide stuff.
Right. 100%. But it's like subtle and you don't really see it on the surface until you really think about what that means.
Well, yeah. And there's a lot of, it's a lot of like, oh, okay. Like, so, you know, it's like, how can we get rid of natives 3 generations from now or 4 generations from
That's
now or whatever.
Fucked up, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So we're getting into it. I'm excited about this. My tribe does it through kind of like lineage. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not necessarily a blood quantum thing. It's more like, okay, so like they can trace back my family and me to the specific like original Cowlitz family that I belong to. And that's through like, you know, it's just keeping track of genealogy records. Like my tribe has like somebody whose like job it is at the tribe and the tribal offices to just like, you know, track that stuff. So it's the sort of thing where like, I remember I was like talking to this guy and he was just like, I was like, oh, my name's Joey Clift. And he was like, oh, what's your mom's name? And I told him my mom's name. And he was like, oh, your mom's name is this. That means she's like related to this person who's related to this person. So you're part of like this clan of Cowlitz. And I was like, oh, cool. And like my mom had already told me that a couple of times. But I just like, it was interesting to see somebody where it's like their job is kind of to do that math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like for us, it's like I have like a tribal ID card and stuff like that. So it's like, I think that when people think about Native identity, it's like oftentimes a really confusing thing about like what is Native. So it's like, you know, is being Native getting a DNA test that says that you're 5% Indian? Does mm-hmm. that make you Native American? If you ask most Natives, no.
Right.
But like, you know, it is that thing where it's like the way that I've kind of broken it down with a lot of friends is it's like, your tribe and your people also have to claim you. So it's in my case, it's like my tribe, like there's a guy that's like, oh, you belong to specifically this band of Cowlitz. You're part of this Cowlitz family. So because of that, you're an enrolled member of the tribe. Our tribe claims you. So it's like when I say I'm Cowlitz and I'm enrolled Cowlitz, I'm like on the books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like sometimes it's not, especially if your tribe's not federally recognized, it's more of like a family thing of just like, you know, I guess it's like the equivalent would be like if you're talking to somebody that like says that they're from your hometown and then you like ask them if they've been to the Shakey's Pizza that everybody knows about. And he's like, what Shakey's Pizza? Right. You're like, wait a second. You're lying. You know, it's kind of like that stuff, you know. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So how did your parents meet then?
Yeah.
I've gotten very shaky verification from my mom, but my dad used to be like, he was like a low-level drug dealer. And my mom, she's been clean for like 20 years, maybe 20 more than that. But I think it was like they met through like, he was a drug seller and she was a drug buyer. But
I mean, romantic, really.
Yeah, how romantic.
They should make a film about that. I'd watch it.
Yeah, how romantic. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was like one of those situations where like, you know, this is probably like the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like they just kind of met through like drug stuff.
And then he became her drug.
Yeah, and then he became, yeah.
So he found his way over to the West Coast and that's how he met your mom.
I mean, I think that my dad's deal is that he was in the army. Mm-hmm. He like served for like 4 years. I think he didn't like go fight. He was like primarily stateside. And I think that he enlisted in the army and then the base he was stationed at was like kind of near southern Washington. I forget exactly which base, Tacoma, I assume. I think that they just kind of like met through that. And then, and then they like got together and they were together for like probably like 8-10 years or something like that. They divorced when I was like kind of young, but I don't know. My parents are cool. I love both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did your dad stay in the area after you guys got? Actually, not you guys, but your parents got divorced.
My dad, he moved to, so like my mom kind of stayed in kind of the Tulalip Reservation / Marysville. And my dad moved to a town called Mukilteo, which was like probably, I would say like 10 miles away. So like, it was like a 15-20 minute drive. It wasn't too bad. It was like, we did like visitation on weekends and all that stuff.
But you were, where were you raised then?
Like, I mean, I was primarily raised by my mom, so like Tulalip Reservation / Marysville, which is Marysville's kind of like the border town of the Tulalip Reservation. Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking this because I genuinely don't really know a lot about growing up on a reservation, but what is that like?
Growing up on a reservation, it's like, I feel like people have this view of reservations as it's just like prairies and buffalo and spirit animals everywhere or whatever. real questions I've been asked by like grown adults are like, if I was born in a teepee, or
really?
Like, or like if I had electricity on my reservation growing up.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, so the questions you're asking me are very, these are educated questions. So like,
My next question was going to ask if you were born in a teepee, but I will cross it out now.
Oh, thank you. Just for corrective purposes, my tribe didn't have teepees. We had longhouses. So I would have been born in a longhouse.
A longhouse.
But I was born in the 80s. So I don't know. I was born in a hospital.
What does a longhouse look like?
So a longhouse, it's basically like, I'm excited about all these questions. So a longhouse is basically like, it's kind of as described in that it's like a long room that's made out of Washington State. So probably like cedar trees and evergreen trees and stuff. And it's literally like just a large room that's separated by usually like blankets, furs and stuff like that, that different families live in. So it's like you might have like 4, 6, 7, 8 families that like live in kind of essentially one house.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I mean, I haven't necessarily done research like about this, but my assumption is that like that's probably where kind of like clans came from, or at least for my tribe. Like my assumption is like, oh, like the clan that I'm part of probably all lived in the same longhouse 200 years ago or something like that.
Right. And is that more common and we just know of teepees and think of teepees because of just like media and culture?
I mean, if you think about it, it's like every tribe is like the differences from one tribe culturally might be as big as the differences from like the United Kingdom and Egypt. Because it's like the country is real big and it's like, you know, and you get like Alaska and stuff in there. It's like, so teepees are a plains thing.
I
think it's like Ojibwe. I'm sure there's somebody going to tweet at me that's going to immediately be like, no, it's this tribe. But growing up in the Pacific Northwest, we primarily did like longhouses and stuff like that. Like the Southwest oftentimes lived in like pueblos and things like that.
Okay.
That's when you get like, I think it's like, I want to say it's like Arizona or New Mexico, where you get those like really cool like structures that are like carved into rock faces. You know, it's sort of like, it's, you know.
I was just reading about that. Yeah. There's one outside of Santa Fe.
Oh yeah. I was, I've heard about it. I had a short film that screened at like a kind of a
I want to ask about the short film.
I'm excited
actually.
About it. It screened in the like a Smithsonian thing near there, and I was like, I really wanted to check it out, but I just like couldn't fly out for it. But I think I had like a job or something that started up.
Well, it sounds like the structures in a reservation are really about the environment that it's in, and like
It's like when I'm talking about like, you know, teepees, longhouses, and stuff like that. It's like I didn't grow up in a longhouse. You know, I grew up in a. My grandma and grandpa on my mom's side lived in like a, you know, a house in a small town. Growing up on the Tulalip Reservation, like I essentially lived in like just like a lower middle class suburb that was like on the reservation. So, you know, I mean, it's like I think that that's a thing that people often think about reservations is they think that it's this like crazy untamed wilderness when it's like, I don't know. I mean, like I went to elementary school on the reservation and it was like an elementary school. Like, you know, I mean, like my friends lived in buildings, not caves, you know?
No, I guess when I think of a reservation, I more just think of like a separate little town, you know? Yeah. It's just like a separate town. I guess I'm curious about your experience because I'm assuming you were raised around other Native kids.
Yeah.
Did you feel at all at any point in your childhood that you like weren't enough because your dad wasn't Native, or like was it ever a question with your peers, or was there a lot of mixedness on the other hand though?
I mean, it kind of depends. There is definitely a thing with some tribes where it's just like, I mean, just kind of like real talk, I think it's one of those things where it's like other kids will kind of find any reason to pick on you. So it's like, you know, it's definitely, and I think that like people just in general are kind of like that sometimes. So it's like, you know, you definitely get, like, you know, I definitely got picked on for being, you know, just like a white passing Native growing up. And then I also, like, you know, got bullied. It's one of those things where it's like Native identity is so, like, weird. And, like, Natives are put into such a small box of kind of how we're allowed to look. So, like, something that I talk about a lot is, like, when I was in college, I had, like, hair that was down to the small of my back that was, like, super traditional. And I would get like bullied for being the Native kid. And then when I got a haircut, or like when I had short hair, I got like bullied for being the not Native kid. So it's kind of like getting it from both sides a little bit.
You don't win either way.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like that's also like, I don't know, I was a punk growing up with a real smart mouth. So I'm sure that probably didn't help either.
Yeah.
There is definitely a thing, you know, like some people are always looking for reasons to kind of like pull people down. And there is definitely a thing sometimes of just like, you know, like, oh, you're like a half breed or you're whatever. I didn't really face that necessarily growing up. I mean, I kind of did, but it was like, it wasn't like using like that specific language.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited how real this got immediately.
I mean, that's what we do.
I mean,
we're
curious
about your experiences, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I would say that like reservation life, it's probably like reservations are some of the like kind of like lowest income places in the country. So like, you know, it's think of it as kind of like, you know, just like lower income suburbs and stuff like that. And it's a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, there's like a lot of poverty and things like that. But, you know, I mean, we had like electricity, like, you know. Yeah.
Did you have any personal internal conflicts, though, being like half Native, like as a kid or anytime?
I mean, for me, it's like growing up, I considered myself, I guess now I would use the term like Xbox Indian, where it's like, what I mean by that is like, I was just a kid that played a lot of video games. Mm. So it's like Xbox, like a video game system. So.
Oh, we know.
Yeah, yeah. Look, you just gotta look, Nintendo is a company that created Mario. I don't know. It's like,
I'm kidding.
I feel like sometimes when I say stuff like that, people are like, oh, Xbox, is that a sacred native thing? And I'm like, no, it's like Microsoft Xbox.
Well, my first thought was the video game. And then I thought, well, maybe that just means he marks X on the box if it asks if he's native. He's enough.
That would be yes, that's all. That's a real thing that we all do. Sure, why not?
I'm kidding, but
we're doing bits. But I'm somebody that I feel like growing up, I was definitely especially this is definitely a product of being from a divorced home when I was young and stuff. Uh-huh. I was just one of those kids that was kind of latchkey and just watched a lot of TV and played a lot of video games. I listened to the Open Mic Eagle episode a little bit ago, and he definitely talked about a lot of that stuff.
Which was just so nice to hear.
It's great. I mean, you guys are great, and he's great. So I was like, oh, I should listen to this great podcast.
I gave you the whole spiel for nothing earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I was polite. I didn't want to say excuse me, I'm a listener. But, I think that that's common, especially for a lot of, comedians and people in L.A., where it's just we were kind of just, shut-in kids.
Right.
And my mom is really passionate about the culture, so she, has regalia. She goes to powwows. She dances at powwows and is, super involved in stuff like that. And she would always, try to get me into just kind of, Native stuff growing up. And, it's something that I was, aware of, but I guess that, it didn't really internalize for me until I was probably in high school, kind of the importance of it.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, there was definitely this feeling for me of and especially growing up on a reservation that wasn't my tribe's, for me, the native culture that I experienced, going to I went to school on the reservation for up until eighth grade. And basically just the Tulalip tribe at the time, they just had tribal run schools up until seventh, eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And then after that, to go to high school, if you wanted to go, you had to go off the reservation.
Yeah.
And I remember, it not being something that really tracked for me as it was a culture that I was experiencing, but it didn't necessarily feel like my culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would see a lot of stuff for assemblies, we would go to the burned out remains of a boarding school that was across the street. And we'd hear about the history of boarding schools, which a boarding school is there was this thing, the Carlisle School popularized it, where it's the term was kill the Indian, save the man.
Jesus.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're getting into it. So it's it was sort of the U.S. government, it was U.S. government funded program where they would straight up kidnap native kids and then take them to these schools and literally just beat them if they spoke their native language or performed English stuff. And it was kind of an attitude of it's just like I said earlier, it's just a genocidal attitude of okay, so we can't convince the parents to stop doing spiritual stuff, but maybe if we traumatize this child, it'll make them not be native.
Wow.
Or
make
not
them
native
turn away from their culture.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there was the burned out remains of a boarding school across the street from my elementary school, which good shit that got burned down. That's one of those things where it's I didn't realize when I was a kid.
Sorry to interrupt. They kept the boarding school on the reservation?
Oh, well, I mean.
The remains.
Yeah, well, it was just at the time it was, at the time I think it was one of those things because I visited recently and now it's there's a parking lot there or something. I think it was probably one of those things where it was just it burned down, sometime in the 50s or the 60s or something.
At the time that they were doing this.
Oh, yeah.
It was you're not even going that far to basically torture kids.
I think that what the deal was, and I could be wrong here, is they would take kids from other tribes that were farther away and they would bring them to that place.
Okay.
And the Tulalip tribe is actually, they're kind of an interesting case where it's it's not they took one tribe and moved them there. It's more they took 12 tribes and were all of you were on this reservation and now you're called the Tulalip tribe. So it's more tribes created by the U.S. government by just taking groups of people and being you guys live here now. So the Tulalip tribe is one of those deals where it was a lot of smaller tribes kind of, put together and forcibly relocated.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if the boarding school was one of those things where it's oh, they're not from this area. So let's also put a boarding school there and take, Snohomish kids or whatever and put them here.
Yeah. I want to ask you about your experience in high school, but first, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Joey Cliff.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
And we're back. Okay. Before the break.
For this very uplifting episode.
Dude, this is very important.
Very cool.
It's so important.
Oh,
and I think more people should realize that.
I don't know, like 90% of the things you're telling me right now.
Exactly.
I've never heard before.
Oh, cool.
And I think people need to hear
exactly
this kind of stuff.
I agree.
I think it's like such a. It's a culture that people have just created in their minds based off stereotypes and movies and pop culture. Like, no one's. I don't think anyone ever really dives deep unless you're closer to the culture.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can get enraged. I'm really, like, I get angry about, like, the Redskins and, like, the how much of a character a Native American is. But if I'm angry, I'm not even Native. I can't even imagine being a Native kid and growing up and seeing all of these images and the word savage, or, like, even, like, branding now. They use the word Native and, like, you know what I mean? So it's just, I can't imagine what that's that experience is like.
Well, the word savage is so insane. Like, it's literally in, I think it's, like, the Bill of Rights or Declaration of Independence, describing Natives as merciless Indian savages. So it's, like, even in just, like, the founding document of this country, we're, like, reduced to being animals, you know?
Right,
right.
But I guess, like, I mean, to put the question back on you guys a little bit, like,
excuse me,
you guys are. Oh my God, sorry. I mean, are you guys halfies? Are you guys mixed? Are you?
Both my parents are Syrian, but my 23andMe says I'm much more than that. But as far as I'm concerned, I say I'm Syrian.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Like, Anna, what's your...
I'm full Iranian, and according to my 23andMe, I am, like, 98% Iranian. So,
oh, okay.
You know, I'm pretty... I'm low-key, like, a little inbred, which is not a joke.
Okay.
I know this for a fact.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that my question was, like, oh, does this track for you guys is, like, a thing at all? But, yeah, you guys...
For us, it's, like, being... Like, I'm the only person in my family... Or, like, my parents are the only people from their families, respectively, who came to America.
Yeah.
So, like, my whole problem was always, like, I was never Iranian enough for my own family.
Right.
Because I was born and raised in America.
Got it.
And I could, you know, like, I always spoke with my Farsi in an American accent, so I'd always be there.
Yeah.
And everyone would, it was like, you could never go with someone and be like, oh my God, that's so cute. Listen to how she talks. And I'm like, okay, I'm fluent. It just sounds different because I don't live here.
Like, we understand everything. Like, I'm fluent in Arabic. I understand it all. I also have, like, a very slight accent now, even though I learned Arabic first.
It's just one.
But, like, it's like, I guess it's the feeling of never being enough.
Yeah.
I'm the American cousin, and I'm the
weird
brown
girl here. You're, like, just a person of color who is, no one will look at you and be like, Syrian?
Yeah. And just the feeling of being very isolated because our families are so spread out and, like, I don't know, your white friends being like, I'm gonna go to grandma's for dinner. I'm just like, my grandma's in a different continent. Like,
so
little things like that growing up really made you feel very isolated and alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what you're talking about. I mean, that makes sense. Just the concept of, like, it was this thing for me growing up where it's like, I mean, I think you talked a little bit about, like, just, like, you know, how I, like, viewed nativeness growing up. And, like, it did take me a little while. Like I said, like, it wasn't until high school that I started thinking about it, but it's like, for a little while, I was like, oh, I'm like half native because like my mom's native and my dad's like not native. And then like, I guess that just as I grew older, I started to realize like, one, like, I mean, like I'm an enrolled member of a tribe. So it's like for me to say that I'm like half Cowlitz is like somebody saying that they're half Californian or whatever.
Right.
It's just like, you know, like I have like a legal distinction of being an enrolled member of a tribe. And then it's also just like, it is this thing for me where like whenever I visit my tribe, I feel like such like love and happiness talking to even people that are essentially complete strangers, but a part of my tribe.
Right.
And like, you know, for me, it's sort of like I've had so many just small moments over the past probably 10 years that have really made me realize like, no, like I'm native and I'm like really proud of that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I don't speak Cowlitz. Like my tribe has like a language. I have a Cowlitz dictionary, and there's a couple times where I've like tried to use like a couple of words here and there to like, you know, to close out like podcasts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like same as you, like whenever I say words, I feel like it's just like buongiorno, where it's just like the most like, oh, I'm saying this as stupid as possible.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it is, but it is this weird thing where it's like there are some natives that definitely have an attitude of like, oh, if you don't speak your tribe's language, you're not native. Which is tough because like some tribes, there are no native speakers left because colonialism and boarding schools and all that stuff. So like, you know, for me, it was just such a, like an internal journey of just like, no, like I feel like I don't go to as many powwows as I would have liked. I don't have regalia. I don't dance. But like, that doesn't mean I'm not native. You know?
You're enough just the way you are.
Yeah. And it's like, that's been a big kind of just thing for me to realize over the past couple of years.
Does your mom speak it?
I don't think that she does. I think that she wants to.
Uh-huh.
We haven't like talked a ton about like specifically the language,
but
it is like, I don't think that there are any, or like if there are like, I don't think there are a ton of like just straight up like native Cowlitz speakers.
Uh-huh. It's like, just kind of faded out
because
of colonialism.
Yeah. It's just like, we're also just kind of like a smaller tribe. There's like, I think about like 4,000 of us or something.
Wow, yeah.
Usually like kind of a benefit of tribes opening up casinos and stuff like that. And just before I might as well like squash this rumor, people think that like every tribe has a casino. It's very much like a top 1% tribes that have casinos. It's most tribes don't have casinos. Uh-huh. It's just
I don't know that.
Yeah. Casinos for tribes are fairly new. I think that's only been a thing since like the 80s.
It kind of makes me very mad that they didn't teach us any of this in school. Like the people that this country flattened to the ground, they don't even mention how they live now. You know what I mean? Like the first thing I can think of, the Trail of Tears, like that's what we learned about in school and like stuff like that. But like, why didn't they teach us about these native people that are still living in this country and we've forced into... I don't know. It just makes me so mad.
Well,
did you experience that in high school or not really?
I mean, a couple things in what you said. There's a report that like a really cool native nonprofit called Illuminative did recently. I think it was called the Defining Native Truth Project. It was put together by a woman named Crystal Echo Hawk, who's just a really good thought leader in kind of native culture right now. And the Defining Native Truth Project is, I think it's like, it was the greatest or the largest study of kind of Native American representation in media and Native American stuff in culture, I think, to ever happen. They released their findings, I want to say last year, maybe 2018, so within the past year or two. And they found that, I want to say like 80% of U.S. schools don't cover Native American history after the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1890. And the other side of that is, I think it's like around 76%, 74% of people want to learn more about Natives. So I think that a reason that like native stuff isn't necessarily talked about in schools is that like, I feel like this country was built on kind of the narrative of American exceptionalism. And, you know, as we know from like movies and TV shows and stuff like that, it's like a very convenient story to say that like the Pilgrims came to the United States in like, you know, 17, whatever, whenever Columbus came here or whatever, or whenever the first Thanksgiving was, which I think was like 1760 or something. I forget.
1760 was independence.
No, it was 1776. That was the first independence. But I don't know, the first
Columbus was 1492.
Yeah, 1492.
So somewhere in the middle of there.
Yes, somewhere between.
Somewhere in those centuries.
But it's a very convenient story to say that like the pilgrims arrived, mm-hmm. and these magical wood elves came out of the forest and bestowed upon them food.
And they broke bread and everything was happy dandy.
And then said, like, hey, if you like this food, you could take this country. It's yours. We bless you. Now we're going to disappear like force ghosts. Bye. We bless you. You know, that's kind of the American narrative, right? Yeah. And, like, you know, Native American genocide is one of those things that's, like, it's a dark part of American history that I think white guilt causes people to ignore out of their own bad feelings or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing that you said is that, like, that this country is, like, stomped Native people into the ground. And it's, like, I don't know. I mean, that is not inaccurate, but, like, that narrative, like, bumps me a little bit because I feel like it's, like, people think of that. People use those terms to assume that we're not here anymore.
Oh,
when, like, there are Native...
I apologize.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's just, like, it's the sort of thing I hear
I was
a lot.
Trying to make, like, a point.
Yeah. You know? And it's, like, you know, they I mean, Native genocide is a real thing. But it's, like, you know, it's, like, we're still here and we still are doing cool stuff. Like,
yeah.
Deb Holland is a Native Congress person who was one of the first Native women in Congress, along with Charisse Davids. She was elected in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Wes Studi was the first Native to accept an award at the Oscars, I think, which was like a year or two ago. So it's like there have been Native astronauts. Yeah. There's Aaron Yazzie is a really good Native that works for NASA who, like, designed the drill bit that's on the mm-hmm. Mars rover. So it's like, you know, it's like people.
I guess what I meant by that is not that you guys, I mean, obviously Natives are still here, but I think not teaching our children and kids that, it makes them seem like they aren't. Because all we know is, like, this narrative, again, of Thanksgiving, and then we're left with, like, making feather hats, and, like, we're left with just, like, this image of what it means to be a Native. And, I mean, like, I didn't have a Native friend growing up, so it's like, we just assume that they're just, like, not here. Yeah. And I think that's the dangerous part
Well, it's like, I mean, that to me is one of the biggest, like, things that Natives are dealing with right now is, like, and this is just me talking, not, you know, this is just kind of my feeling is, you know, it's a Native American invisibility and erasure. So it's like invisibility is that there's, like, very few Natives on TV in the media. Like, I mean, I often find myself being the first Native that, like, even in Hollywood, will, like, an exec will tell me, like, oh, you're the first Native that I've ever met with.
Whoa.
And I'll be like, oh, you've been an exec for 30 years and I'm the first Native you met with.
Yeah.
Cool. But also, yikes. You know, there just, like, aren't a lot of Natives that are kind of given an opportunity to shine in the media.
Yeah.
And because of that, like, kind of a lot of my story growing up is, like, I knew that I wanted to do comedy for a living. Like, this has been a very dark podcast, but I'm a comedy writer. I like making people laugh. That's my job.
And, that's how we do it here.
Thanks. Yeah, great.
When did you know you wanted to do comedy?
But that's what I was saying is, like, I knew I wanted to do comedy growing up because I just, like, watched a lot of, I don't know, I stayed at home, played video games, and watched The Simpsons and Conan O'Brien and stuff. But, like, being Native, because, like, in the 90s, I didn't really see any Natives on TV or any prominent Native comedians. So I didn't think I was, like, allowed to work
in
comedy.
That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah. So, like, I went to school to legit be, like, a small market TV weather guy. Because I was, like, Washington State University, the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication. And it's, like, Eastern Washington, kind of near the Idaho border. Like, I went to school to be a small market weather guy because I was, like, oh, I don't think I'm allowed to work in comedy, but, like, weather guys get to, like, crack jokes and have weird personalities.
That's so specific that you narrowed in on that.
Yeah,
like, that's
something
I can do.
Yeah.
That's being visible and also making jokes.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, that feels like a real thing that I could do. And you know, right when I was about to graduate, like, a college TV show that I wrote, produced, and co-starred in ended up winning, like, a National College Comedy Award.
Whoa.
People at, like, Harvard, Ithaca, and stuff like that. And I remember literally thinking to myself, like, oh, this trophy is going to look really cool on my news desk in Post Falls, Idaho. And a bunch of my professors kind of pulled me aside and were like, hey, you should just work in comedy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a thing I can do. And this was me in my mid-20s.
Dude, totally can relate to that feeling. I didn't see a single Arab woman doing comedy.
Yeah.
I love comedy. I didn't see a single Arab woman in film, either behind or in front of the camera. And you grow up, and even though you're a grown adult, there's still this idea like, I'm not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And it makes you think like, that's the reason white men get so far ahead. It's because they always see themselves doing everything.
Yeah.
And they can just be like, yeah, I can be president, because that's every president I've ever seen has been a white guy.
Well, yeah.
So right. Little things like that. And representation is so important for that reason. It's the reason we started this podcast.
But it's something that, like, I mean, talking about kind of like native invisibility and erasure, it's like, that's 100% an example of like, you know, there's probably like, there's a couple of dozen natives kind of working in the entertainment industry. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of really talented people, a lot of really good writers, really great actors. But like, I really think that the reason that there's not more, because like, I think that that's another thing that's like worth talking about is like, people think that natives are like eradicated or that we're not around anymore. But like, there are like around 6 million Native American people on the U.S. Census, which is similar in population size to like the Jewish American population and the Chinese American population.
Damn.
So it's like to say that we're like eradicated or stomped out, it's like there are like around as many Native American as there are Jewish Americans. And
right.
Nobody's just like, I don't know, it's like the Goldbergs is a TV show, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's just that like we're only seen in the media as like mascots.
Right.
Yeah. Or like I said, like, you know, merciless Indian savages were like basically reduced to being animals.
But like, both of those things are on such opposite sides of the spectrum. Either you're an animal and you're a savage, or you're just like a cartoony mascot. Like,
I think that they're one and the same, because they're both reducing us to not being human.
Yeah,
very true.
So it's like, you know, and even just like the, you know, it's the Washington D.C. NFL team and like native sports mascots, like the aesthetic of like a red screaming native is like directly taken from like propaganda created by the mm-hmm. U.S. government in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And even like the term redskin, it's like that's literally referring to like the bloody scalp of a native, which was traded by like a hunter to get money from the government for like killing natives.
God, that is and, so fucking.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, so it's like, and that's something where it's like, you know, that's not me just saying whatever. It's like you can literally read like newspaper clippings from like the 1850s, 1860s, where it's like from like the. I forget exactly what state, but it's like from the governor's office of Wyoming or whatever. That's just like $2 for every red skin of a native savage that you kill or whatever.
Wow.
Wow.
So it's like even just the name Redskins is like directly a reference to our genocide.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, like for me, like just I guess to tie this back to like kind of my story of just like. Or like even just like kind of native representation is like, I feel like oftentimes because there aren't really natives in the media, native people aren't given like permission to dream.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like there are a lot of problems that like natives are dealing with. You know, I mean, things like murdered and missing indigenous women, native women go missing at a rate far greater than other ethnicities.
I remember when I learned about that, I was like this.
But it's like, that's all just like, us being dehumanized to a level that people feel like that's okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in addition to that, it's like natives, we traditionally graduate high school and go to college at like a lower rate than pretty much any other mm-hmm. ethnicity. Also, like native suicide rates are the highest of any ethnicity.
Whoa.
And like that to me is definitely like, oh, it's like, if there was like a native Conan O'Brien or something like that, or just like a native Simpsons where like a native kid could see natives that are like, that exist in 2020 and are successful and are like, you know, doing stuff and stuff like that, I really feel like, you know, those numbers would go down and up. Like it's sort of it used to be called the Ghostbusters effect. Now it's called the Captain Marvel effect, where when the all women Ghostbusters movie came out,
mm-hmm.
the following year, there was like a record number of women that signed up to go to school for like STEM jobs.
Whoa.
And Captain Marvel came out last year. There have been a record number of women who have applied for the Air Force.
Whoa.
So it's like literally, so it's like straight up, there's like research where it's like, you know, like if you see people that you relate to, especially if you're like a teen that are like doing something, you're going to like realize, oh, that is a thing that I am allowed to do.
I make films and make art and do poetry and dabble in comedy because I always think like I'm doing it for my younger self and the younger version of me that's out there somewhere right now.
Yeah.
And that's probably what you probably can relate to too is like
100%.
Just the younger version of not only you, but there are so many different kinds of you out there now.
Well, that's something that like I talk about this a lot where it's just like when I first started, I moved to LA in 2010 after graduating college. And for my first like 7 or 8 years, my nativeness didn't necessarily like intersect with comedy that I did. You know, it's like I wrote on a relaunch of Looney Tunes and Cartoon Network. I'm not necessarily bringing my like nativeness to writing for Bugs Bunny. I mean, like on some level I might be, but it's like I'm not like outwardly doing it. And, you know, it wasn't until like basically it, a lot of the stuff that we talked about that's kind of like, you know, darker and sadder, it was really tough for me to try to figure out how to like make jokes about that stuff.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until 2017, kind of at the urge of a couple of my friends that used to run a comedy book publisher called The Devastator, that kind of urged me to write like kind of a short zine about just Native representation in media. So it's like, it's called the American Indian Ready to Wear Catalog 2018. if you Google it, there's a free PDF. If you follow me on Twitter, if you tweet at me, I'll send you a free PDF. And it's basically like a fashion catalog about all of the things that all the ways that natives are allowed to look in the media. Mm. So it's like one of the pages is Iron Eyes Cody, the crying Indian from the Keep America Clean or whatever commercials from the '70s. And it's just like, oh, if you don't cry when you see trash, are you really native? Or it's like the Pocahontas from the Disney cartoon where it's just like, oh, if you can't talk to animals and your best friend isn't a tree, are you really a native person? It's like that kind of stuff. And like that is something that it really unlocked something into me of the realization of like, you know, it's like you can make goofs and you can write like, you know, sketches that are about like a police officer that won't stop farting or whatever. But it's like for me, like what gives me so much more fulfillment is it's like creating things that help marginalized groups feel seen. Mm-hmm. Like I want to show through things that I make like a funny native kid growing up on a reservation that doesn't feel like they have a ton of options, that like maybe working in the entertainment industry is a realistic career goal, you know? Yeah.
I think that's a very beautiful thing, and I want to get more into it. Take one more break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
And we're back. So when you were growing up, when you got to high school, and then when you were like choosing what to do in college, did your mom try and have any influence over that, or was she very open to letting you do what she wanted to do?
So my mom, I think this is, I guess, I say this with love, and it's going to get dark and then get cool. I think being raised by like a recovering drug addict has definitely like put me in a position where my mom was just like, as long as you're happy and healthy, like you're, you know, she's happy. So like my mom's also like an artist. She like paints murals for a living.
Yeah.
So it's like she at no point did my mom or dad really push me in any particular direction. Mm-hmm. And I'm somebody that like in high school, like, you know, I think that I, you know, nearly fell into the trap that a lot of Native kids fall into, and that like I just didn't really apply myself in school. So like I graduated high school with like a 1.2 GPA. I like I literally like almost failed out of high school. And it wasn't until I think I was like, I was kind of like on a path to fail out of high school. And then it wasn't until I was a junior that my school, and this is the kind of the hyper specific why weather felt realistic to me. My school had a kind of like a small TV station that was like, it was basically like we had like a morning announcements program every morning. Which, did you guys have that at all?
I never had that, but you always see.
You always see it.
It's
like there was like a South Park episode about it. Yeah. So it's like some high schools have it where it's like a news program every day. That's like for us, it was like the end of second period for 5 minutes where everybody in the school turns on the TV and essentially just like kids do like a news program about the school.
I only saw that in TV. I didn't know it was a real thing.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, so for us, it's like the news stories were just like, oh, homecoming tickets are on sale or whatever. And I remember watching it when I was a sophomore and just realizing that like it wasn't very good just because it's like these are high schoolers. They don't know like they don't know how to be news anchors. And I was kind of at like a weird transition point where like up until I was probably like in eighth grade, I told myself like, oh, I'm going to be a video game programmer. I love video games. Mm-hmm. That seems like an industry that I would like to work in. And then I just took like a programming class and I was like, this is hard. I don't want to do this. So I kind of went through a period of like, oh, I'm not really sure like what I want to do. And then I just remember watching the Morning Announcements program, a couple of my friends commenting about how it's not very good. And then thinking to myself, oh, I feel like I could probably do better than that. So the next quarter, next semester or whatever, I like signed up for that class. And like I wasn't really put on air up until the guy who did the weather really regularly got sick. And it was literally a like day of like, hey, Joey, you're like the one person in this class that's like not really doing anything. Quick, put on this button up shirt and tie and like report the weather. And I was like, oh, OK, sure, I'll do it. And then I just like had a lot of fun doing it. I also just like came up with catchphrases and weird nicknames for myself. So it was sort of like an immediate like I did it. And then like after class, when I was walking between classes, usually nobody pays attention to the announcements. But I had a lot of random people that were like, did you do the weather? You're really funny. And for me, that was sort of like a big, and this was, yeah, probably like 10th, 11th grade, a big just like point of like, oh, this is a thing that like gives me positive reinforcement.
Right.
And
you enjoyed it.
Yeah. And like, I enjoyed it and I really like had fun doing it. And it was a big moment for me of like, oh, I haven't really applied myself in school. I failed like half of my classes. But then I found this one thing that I really like. So like that was my like, oh, I'm going to apply myself in school now. And like, you know, I graduated with a 1.2 GPA. So that tells you how low my GPA was to build me up to that. And then I, you know, went to community college, got like a, you know, really applied myself, got like, you know, graduated with honors from community college and then used that to transfer to university. And then got like, you know, like a 3.2, like a pretty good university GPA.
That's a huge like difference though from where you, from where you started. I think it's amazing.
But I think it's just like with kids, it's just like finding a thing that you are excited about.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I think that for a lot of natives, it's like it doesn't help to get you excited about school when like your school's team name is the Savages. And the only time that Native history is ever talked about is like, when your teacher makes everybody make like fake headdresses out of cardboard or whatever.
Wait, they were actually called the Savages?
My school was named the Tomahawks. So they were the Tomahawk Chop and stuff like that. And like the Native students protested it a lot.
Wow. You know,
I mean, it is one of those weird things where it's like, I think about it as an adult of just like, that is insane to like go from reservation school growing up to like
a public school
to then like transfer to a public school called the Tomahawks, where like students would like wear red face and do the Tomahawk chop. And it's
Joey,
like,
that is crazy.
Yeah, it is just those, one of those things where it's like, and then it's like the Native students would be like, would protest it and like say like, that's, you shouldn't do the Tomahawk chop. Like people think that the Tomahawk chop is a thing that honors Native people, but it was like literally invented by like a beer commercial in the 60s where a cartoon bear had like a fake headdress on, did the tomahawk chop around a fire to like sell beer, you know?
Wow.
So it's like this thing that's like meant to honor Native people was invented by a beer commercial, you know?
That's just crazy to go from, that's crazy. I didn't realize that's what your fucking high school was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So like, so, and that for me like was kind of another moment of like the importance of nativeness and kind of like taking pride in my Native identity is realizing, honestly, it's just like, it was for me, it was like talking to a lot of other Native kids who like had a lot of problems with the mascot. And for me, just being something where it's like, oh, all I've ever really thought about is video games or video games or like reporting the weather. But like, this is a legitimate gripe that like, it's, it speaks deeply to the Native side of me.
Yeah.
So that is something that caused me to get like just like a little bit more outspoken. And it's like take like a little bit more pride in kind of like, you know, who I am and my identity and stuff like that.
I think it's a really important thing to kind of tie back what we were talking about earlier, too, is in your career now and in your creative pursuits, it's like being the person you needed when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And I think I want to finally bring up the film that I saw that you did in 2017, I believe, right?
I finished it in 2018.
2018.
We finished it at the end of 2018 and then it like went through festivals in 2019 and then we posted online in November.
Well, my bad, but in recent years...
20 minutes of research, how dare.
It's called, actually it's longer, maybe you should say it.
Okay, the title of it is Telling People You're Native American When You're Not Native is a lot like telling a bear you're a bear when you're not a bear. The title is 24 words long when I originally named it. I didn't think it was a thing I was going to have to say a lot.
But I mean, it's a really good, it's like a little bit over 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a animated short and... basically, like, these scenarios come up, like, it's just, like, what the title says. Like, a guy will, like, say he's native and then gets mauled by a bear. And, like, all these little things, it's just, like, basically telling the audience that, like, it's not okay to say you're native if you're not. And it's not okay to utilize those things if you aren't of those things. Or like
government.
Or, sort I don't of. Know, just, it's also, I think it's a good statement on allyship at the same time.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, so I would highly recommend it. We'll put a link in the info of this episode. If you scroll down, please watch it. It's literally a 2-minute watch. It's very good.
That's the thing that like happens a lot is like, I mean, you guys might experience this a little bit, but it's like, sometimes when I tell people I'm native, like I'll get the like, oh, me too. My great great grandmother was a Cherokee princess or whatever. And it's like,
what?
And it's, or it's like, oh, me too. Just got a 23andMe and I'm 10% whatever. And it's like, it's like, you know, it's kind of the, in the back of your mind, you're like, here we go. But in the front of your mind, you're like, cool.
Right.
You know,
like my 23andMe said I was like 1% Japanese. You don't me going around being like, I'm Japanese too.
Yeah. You're not going to Little Tokyo and being like, oh, like Kambawa. Like, you know,
But like, so there was one instance in it where, or like one little moment where this like politician looking guy is like, or like someone in like with a job.
Yeah.
Has a job because he took the place of a native, or like because he claimed being native when he wasn't. It really reminded me of Elizabeth Warren. And do you have any thoughts on what she like she's a politician with a one of the biggest politicians right now,
right?
And her story was for a large part being native.
Well, okay, this is let's see, this is going to be a complex and maybe long side tangent. So with that part of that short, like I think if the exact line is just like, if you tell people that you're native and you're not native and you use that to take jobs and opportunities away that are set aside for natives, you're gonna get mauled by a bear, and then he gets mauled by a bear and his arm falls off and it's super funny. And that was more referring to like, there are a lot of people in the LA comedy community that like will say that they're native to get like diversity opportunities.
Yeah. Mm.
So like there's a comedy theater in LA, like a big comedy theater that's been around for a while, that like the head of the diversity program was flat out just telling their friends, hey, just like say that you're native and then we'll give you the diversity scholarship because like everybody's a little native.
Oh my God.
And it's like, and that's something where it's like that year, like multiple people like hit me up and were just like, hey, Joey, do you know that like this bullshit's going on? So like, and then there's also like I was a writer for like a big kind of network diversity showcase a couple of years ago. And every year they try to get like a native person to do it, but their nativeness is always kind of like a little bit questionable. And my year, the person that was native, I was really excited to talk to him because everybody was like, oh, that's the native guy. You're the native writer. You should talk to him. And I walked up to them and immediately was like, oh, my name is Joey Clift. Yeah, here you're the native person. I'm enrolled Cowlitz. Like, what's your tribe? And the person said, oh, I don't really know what my tribe is. I just like heard that my like, I heard from my aunt that like I'm part native somewhere around my family. So I just started checking that box and now I'm here.
Wow.
And it's like somebody just openly say that of like, and it's like, I know like so, like there's like so many like, Janice Meeting, Jason Graysel, like Lucas Brown Eyes, Kelly D'Angelo, Tim Mace, so many just like great native sketch performers that would like kill for that opportunity.
Yeah.
And to like have this guy that like is like at the time was probably in his like early 40s that was just like, oh, I think it's okay to take this opportunity.
Yeah.
And like, you know, especially for like creative opportunities, it's like if I'm hired as like a native writer on a show, or if I'm like I'm being hired for like my personal experience of being native. So what I'm going to bring into the room are like stories of growing up in a reservation, mm-hmm. stories of being like a native mentor at my student center or whatever at my college, stories of being an involved member in Native Hollywood. So like, what's that guy that like just like found out he was native when he was 40 mm-hmm. from like an aunt as like a maybe not a real thing, but he just started checking the box because his aunt said as an aside, like what part of the native experience is that guy going to bring to like an acting role or whatever, or like writing a script or anything, or directing or whatever, you know? And the answer is no part, because that guy's not native.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense. That part of the film makes a lot of sense now. So you made the film, and it went around to festivals, I'm guessing?
Oh, yeah.
That experience?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, I originally just made the short, literally. For the longest time, I was like the only native that got a lot of opportunities at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, mm-hmm. which is one of the big comedy theaters in L.A. They, as far as I know, they've never had a person in charge of the diversity program telling their friends to lie about being native. So by process of elimination, you can eliminate that theater.
Right.
And I think I'm the first native to ever be on like a house team at UCB in LA. I don't think that there have been any natives since then. And and I try to use my position as somebody who's got their foot in the door in the alt comedy community, which UCB, it's like Saturday Night Live uses them as a farm league. So to get involved there is like a big deal if you're a comedy person. So I'm trying to use my position to just like, I guess, make opportunities for natives that are maybe not being given those opportunities. So late 2018, I put together the first ever showcase of Native American comedians at UCB. It was on Columbus Day, because when else would it be?
Yes.
It was called the Ghost of Christopher Columbus Theater Smudging Spectacular.
That's amazing.
The premise is every year on Columbus Day, the ghost of Christopher Columbus rises from his grave to terrorize natives. And the only thing that can scare him back to hell is jokes from native comedians. we did that. And I was like, oh, I'm like hosting this and producing it, but I'm like a comedy writer, like primarily. So like I should have like some of my writing to showcase in it. And I'd also been just kind of like, you know, meaning to make like kind of just like a nice short film or something like that. So I put together this short. It was voiced by Jason Graysel, who's a really good Blackfeet actor, writer, and then animated by David Kantowitz, who's not native, but he's a nice guy. And like I originally made it literally just a screen at this UCB show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, afterwards, I'll just put it online or whatever. Right. And it just got like such a good reaction from the crowd that I was like, I mean, I've been meaning to like put a short film through festivals. Like this doesn't really have like a narrative, but like, why not? I'll do it. So I submitted it to festivals and it like pretty much immediately blew up. I got into like dozens of festivals, won a bunch of awards.
That's amazing.
It screened at like the Smithsonian multiple times.
That's so cool.
It
must be so validating.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, I'm not sure if you know, you guys create content that's specifically about like kind of your ethnic and cultural experiences, but it is this like, to do that, it is just such, it's fulfilling and validating in a way that like, you know, like I said, writing a sketch about a cop that won't stop farting just mm-hmm. like doesn't bring me, mm-hmm. you know? And that's something where like now I would say that like just in kind of my own writing and my own work, most of the stuff that I do is about native stuff just because it's like, that's what brings me the most fulfillment right now. And those are the stories that I feel like I like both want to tell and should tell right mm-hmm. now. You know, especially in a year where like the Super Bowl featured two teams with mascots that are racist toward natives, you know,
yeah.
Or like, you know, like when there's so much like native stuff in the news, but without like really any native point of view to it, it's like, oh, people need to see like a native point mm-hmm. of view in the media.
Yeah. It was Chiefs and 49ers.
Yeah.
What is it in the 49ers? Because I just don't know.
So the 49ers, so the San Francisco Gold Rush was one of those things that like was definitely pushed by the U.S. government as a reason to push Manifest Destiny and to push the idea mm-hmm. of moving west. And like, you know, it is one of those things where like the gold rush directly led to the displacement of so many native people and the displacement and the destruction of so many sacred native sites through people using dynamite to blow up hillsides and stuff.
Okay.
And then beyond that, it's like 49ers straight up like enslaved native people and forced them to work in their mines, like literally to the point where like they would work native people. And like, I should know, but I don't know like the specific tribes off the top of my head. But it's like they would literally work natives like to death in the mines and then just like get another native and make them work themselves to death. So it's like, you know, it is just this like thing that's directly like evocative of native genocide and colonialization.
Yeah. I did not know. Thank you for letting for informing me on that.
Shout out to, I mean, actually, I learned that from an article written by Zach Johnson, who's a really good native uprocks writer. So check that out.
Shout out to him. I learned when I was just in Toronto and I learned.
Yeah, Toronto rules. I love Toronto.
Yeah, they were all very nice people. And we did a live Daily Zeitgeist there. And I was informed like 2 days beforehand that we should do like a land acknowledgement before the show. And I panicked because I was like, I'm not informed enough. And I like dove into research. We had one of our writers is based in Toronto. And cool. I had to have him help me because it was like a complete moment of like, first of all, I don't even know what a land acknowledgement is. And then it was like getting the background, trying to understand like what it means and like how to approach it and like not like it was tough for me because I was like, I don't want to be this person who's just doing a land acknowledgement like flippantly. Like I didn't know like how to approach it because I was like, God, I'm such an idiot. And like how I play myself on that show is like I'm very like goofy and weird and and then to like all of a sudden be like, guys, I'm going to be serious, you know, like it felt like I couldn't do it justice. But then like, you know, everyone was talking to me and like, you know, just do like it's not about any of that, just do it. And like even if you read it from a script because you don't know, it's like the point is you're acknowledging the people who were here before you. Like it's not really about you being like, I have done, you know, I don't know. I was like trying to get out of my own head to be like, I should just do it and not be like.
It's not, I mean, it's not just the people that are here before, that were here before you. It's also the people that are still there.
Yes.
So it's like, I get what you're talking about. Like I kind of ran into a similar situation a couple of weeks ago. I was like asked to speak on a panel and literally 5 minutes before the panel, the person who was running the panel grabbed me and said like, oh, I just realized that you're the one native doing this entire thing. You should do a land acknowledgement for this. And I was like very quickly just like, I mean, I don't know like what tribes that original land. This was like not in California. So I was like, I don't really know what tribe. Then I quickly like Googled it and was like, okay, like it might be one of these tribes. And then it's like, I don't know how to pronounce the name of that tribe. And then it's like, I ended up not doing the land acknowledgement just because it felt to me like, I mean, one, there was a certain level of like, oh, the native guy has to do a land acknowledgement.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was also a level of like a respect of like, oh, I don't want to do this like, because if I do it wrong, that's like,
right.
You know, it's like, that's not, it's like.
What is a land acknowledgement?
So a land acknowledgement is, it's something that you do before events where you basically acknowledge the people who helped develop the land and kind of the what's the word for it? The people who were here for centuries and are still here. So, for example, like Los Angeles is largely built on the Gabrielino Tongva people's land. So, I recently, doing the native shows, I kind of ran into something where I was like, I would feel like a poser if I didn't have a land acknowledgement before this native show. Also, I have weeks. It's my show, so I can do whatever I want. It's not being sprung on me 2 minutes beforehand. So I put together like a slide that was just like a land acknowledgement for the Gabrielino Tongva people. And I, printed out the slide and, I mean, I asked UCB if they would print it out, frame it and put it in front of their theater. And they said yes.
Wow.
So now there's like a land acknowledgement to the Gabrielino Tongva people that's outside the UCB Sunset
Theater.
Wait,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really significant.
Yeah. They hung it up a little bit ago. And that's like, that's a lot of like kind of what we were talking about earlier is like, you know, that's not me writing a TV show with a native lead character, but that's me taking an alt comedy space that Saturday Night Live uses as a farm league and that like is developing so many of the great comedians coming up And like making the space just a little friendlier to native people.
And just imagining another native kid seeing that.
Yeah.
It's fucking worth it.
But it's usually land acknowledgement is like, we would like to acknowledge that this event takes place on the land of the Gabrielino Tongva people, who are the original stewards of this land. They've been here for thousands of years. They're still here and they're great. You know, that's kind of the more casual one that it's on UCB, but it's like, you know, it's sort of just like you said, it's just acknowledging.
Right. And I really tried your best.
Yeah.
But I mean, people were so happy. Everyone was like, you made the effort. And I was, again, like, I was scared, like what you were saying. I was like, if I don't do this justice, what am I doing here? And I really tried, and I hope it worked. I did my research. I got other people to confirm my research.
Well, it's not like a magic thing. It's just like,
it's like, I don't want to be someone who's just like, hey guys, it's the woke thing to do. It's like, no, I want to do something. And everyone was telling me like, that's what you should do.
It's
and
the
I
right
didn't
want to
dismiss it. And I always get very in my own head about such things based off like what you were saying of like.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's like, I've talked to like, land acknowledgements are a little more common in Canada. They don't happen in the States as much as they should.
I know.
I started low key guilting people at events when I'm speaking on a panel at something like I spoke on a diversity panel a little bit ago, and it was like all about diversity. And I definitely did a landing. I was like I was like halfway through the day, and I definitely was like, oh, as a native person, I guess I got to do a land acknowledgement. And then I did it. And I was just like, hey, you know, like, so that was cool. It got a big cheer. You know, everybody in the room, if you do an event like this, you can do it at the start of the event, you know, like, or like you could put a sign up outside the event. Or if you're a band doing a concert, you can just put like a sign on the door or whatever. It's like, it doesn't have to be
thing. What like UCB has, just like a framed thing in front of their door. It's just like, that's better than not having it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it took you, a native performer, native comedian, to even bring that up to their attention. And
when I asked them, they were super cool about it. They were like, of course we'll have that.
But they just didn't think of it. You know what I mean? Like, especially because it's not as common here.
When I think that stuff like that, it's like, that specifically is like, you know, it's like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's like, a big move and also a small move, but it's like doing what we can to erode away the narrative that natives are like magical wood imps who gave a bunch of pilgrims a turkey and then we're like, bye, watch that. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was actually very a nice moment because certain tribe names that I would, you know, like one the longer ones that I clearly like had to write out phonetically to say, to be safe, like people, the crowd said it with me.
Yeah.
And that was like really like, dude, wow, Canada like rules. That's what I was like, oh my gosh, Toronto. But, like you guys are, you're like, you see me knowing that I'm nervous and you are working, you are saying it with me to be like, we all are here. We like are doing this together and acknowledging this land. And I was like, wow, it was very moving. Like I was like, that's kind of beautiful.
But I guess that like, that's, I mean, when I talked about like, I guess like talking, you know, talking native or like the difference between like East Coast and kind of like my East Coast family and my like native family is it's like, I feel like there's just like there's a warmth there and it's like moments like that are like, you know, like it's like, oh, that's native as shit. Like, you know, it's super native. Like, you know, it's like to have like shared experiences like that where it's like, you know, and it's also like, I feel like for a lot of natives, like myself included, when I'm like at an event and they do that, it definitely like warms a part of my soul that is not often given light.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just like a feeling of like, wow, like other people give a shit.
Yeah. It's really beautiful. We have learned so much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Shit, man.
I thank you so much for being so, I don't know, candid and open, like willing to talk to us about all these things. I know it's annoying to have to play the role of educator, I'm sure, a lot of the time. But I really appreciate it.
Oh, totally. But I feel like it's like different, like being like, I'm sure that you guys know, like members of marginalized groups on podcasts, it's like, it's different if people like ask you like actual questions than if they're just like, duh, did you grow up in a teepee? You know, or just like,
well, I do appreciate your patience though, because I think,
longhouse. I mean, I was born in a hospital. It's just traditionally, it would have, if it was like 200 years ago, it would have been.
Well, I think, I just think a lot of marginalized people are, especially in this country or in a country that they are the marginalized, they are forced into the role of educator a lot of the times. And I appreciate that you're patient about it. And
oh, of course.
I just think, like, even though our experiences are very different, they're also a little similar in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I can relate to a lot of the things you're saying. And, like, especially, like, a lot of my work didn't, I, like, write poetry and I make films, and I really ignored my Muslim upbringing and my Syrian heritage for a really long time because it was really painful.
Right.
And I'm realizing now that I am more fulfilled when I acknowledge that.
When it's, like, for me, like, being Native wasn't painful to me, but it was just tough. Like, writing stuff about Native issues, it just, like, made me, like, mad about, like, you know, it's like colonization.
It just
like,
makes me sad.
Boring school. Yeah, it's
it
like,
made
it's
me
like,
sad, like, to, yeah, yeah. To remind myself of, especially, I mean, like, it's very different, I guess. But yeah, but I really I feel like there's similarities there.
I feel like the emotional core is similar. And, like, I mean, I don't know, like, I think it is, like, it is one of those things where it's, like, this podcast is a space specifically set aside for talking about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, this is a space where, like, I don't mind being an educator. What's tough is, like, I don't know, like, the 6 stand-up shows, they're LA-based, that reached out to me the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh, God.
And were like, hey, we want, like, a Native on the show, but we don't know anybody else. What? Will you do it?
Wow.
And it's like, these are shows that, like,
that's
hadn't booked me any other time. Oh, yeah, I can show you guys. I could show you guys Facebook messages from people.
That's
and it's like,
so
and it's
rude.
Like, and it's like, that's a
okay.
And it's, wow. It's like, also like, oh, you asked it like that.
Right.
And that's a situation where it's like, I'm being brought into a comedy space, not to be the super funny comedy writer that I am or the super funny comedian that I am. I'm brought in to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And like, that's this space is like built for it. So it's like, it's good that this exists, but it's like, it sucks when you're brought into like comedy things to be an educator, because it's like, oh, you got to like be an educator.
But also like they're parading funny. You around.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's that's what gets me, because we've both been in that situation too, where like we feel like we're just there to be paraded around being like, look, we're woke.
Oh, yeah. It's like, aren't we so like, yep, we got a Native.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I feel like my connection to you guys is through Zara Norbash, who's a super funny Muslim Iranian comedian. And like, we talk about that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a road that's tough to navigate, because it's like, you've got to like be funny. Also, you've got to like educate people about their like weird questions about your thing. Also, like, you're being 100% exploited and tokenized. So you've got to like navigate that in a way that either is okay for you or damages your soul.
Yeah, because this, at the end of the day, it's still an opportunity.
But
and
it's
you're like, it's conflicting.
It's also you, but you can't be too much.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have just the right amount of balance of like approachable before all of a sudden you're like, you're either too Iranian or too Syrian. Like, I don't know. I don't get where she's coming from.
Right.
Or like, I don't get where he's coming from. It's like, you have to have such a perfect balance that you're like, this isn't fair. This isn't right.
When it's like, I mean, like we said earlier, if you're like a white dude that wants to be president, there's 44 examples of people that you could look to as like, oh, I could be president. Whereas like for us, it's like, not only is it like we have to like fight for even our ability to dream to do something, but it's also like when we're put into those spaces, we're constantly like pushed back through stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, like, so I'm like Native, but like, is my, I don't want to be like, you know, it's like,
you're never going to be the lead. You're never going to be the main. You're always going to be the token.
Yeah.
And
or, I mean, I don't think always, because it's like, you can kind of push back on it.
I wasn't trying to say that as a fact. I'm saying like from their perspective, that's how they see me a lot of times.
When it's like, but it's like that, unless you confront people about it.
Yeah.
It's like,
and it just takes time. And I think at the end of the day, this the same way that you and Zara talk about it is the same way, like, we, every time we have someone with a different experience on the show, we realize, like, we're more similar than not. And,
100%.
We're not alone.
Yeah.
So, Joey, where can people find you? And what would plug anything you want.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. I've got stuff to plug. You can follow me on Twitter at Joey Tainment. You can follow me on Instagram at Joey Clift with, like, 5 I's. The Joey Clift with 1 eye was taken by a 12-year-old, and so I was like, I'll just add some eyes to this. If you tweet at me or reach out to me on Instagram, I'll definitely send you a free PDF of the American Indian Ready-to-Wear Catalog 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It's a $1 value, so get that.
Get that bargain.
And then, let's see, things to promote. My short film, Telling People You're Native American When You're Not Native, is you guys know it's a long name. You can find that. I think that's like the link to that. If you Google it, you can find it. But
Vimeo.
It's also like it's on Vimeo. There's a link to it in my Twitter bio. There's a link to it in my Instagram bio. And then a thing I'm actually really excited to promote. A little bit ago, so the comedian Tig Notaro, she does a thing where she every day she gives a new comedian access to her Twitter account. It's something that she's done for several years. And it's just kind of her bit. So a little bit ago, she tweeted out, or whoever runs her account tweeted out, that like they just wanted to try some like new stuff. Mm-hmm. So I responded with just like, oh, your new thing should be like giving a voice to more natives. So her assistant reached out to me and said like, oh, that's a great idea. Do you want to just put together a month of natives?
Wow.
So I spent probably like a month or two doing that. And it started this month. And, you know, I put together a list of just like 22 really funny native comedians, really good native actors, really great native artists, activists, and a lot of people that I think give like a good swath of the native experience. There are like, there are res natives, there are urban natives, mm-hmm. there's all of them. And, you know, so it's weird for me to plug another comedian's Twitter account, but follow Tig Notaro for the month of March if you want to see tweets from a bunch of natives, and then follow those natives too if you thought that yeah. this native perspective was interesting.
I think also, it's so important. Yeah. I'm so proud to know you, man.
Oh, thanks. Also, like, I'm just one guy. I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for other natives. Like I said, there are 570 plus different tribes, like hundreds of more at the state level. So it's like,
but
it's
still, like, it's your just, efforts yeah. mean so much.
Well, I mean, oh, thank you. I appreciate it. But I just mean that, like, don't just like follow me and be like, get in the native perspective.
Right.
It's like
my native friend.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's how we friend. Kind of feel like, too. I think, like, I'm usually like the one Syrian someone's ever met, and
yes,
like,
you get it.
Yeah, we the marginalized are have a common thread yeah. of suffering.
But that's like I always like I have like text chains of a couple of friends that are just like from different marginalized groups, and it's always just like had a weird general meeting, yeah. and it's just like, oh, what happened? And they'll be like that, and yeah. I'll be like, oh, the native version of that is this, you know, like
yeah. But anyways, you guys follow Joey on all platforms. Watch his film.
And check out your zine.
Yeah,
check out my zine. Tweet at me. I'll send you a free copy.
Get the PDF and follow Tig in the month of for the month of March.
Yeah, and then unfollow her in April. And just for the month of March.
But no, like if you're on Twitter and you're enjoying the native exposure and the native content, like reply to it and tell them how much you appreciate it, so we can like get more of that stuff out there. You know, I think it's really important to engage. And if Joey hadn't engaged, he wouldn't have given you wouldn't have the opportunity, you know?
Like, yeah.
So I think it's very important. And
demand native stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can follow Ethnically Ambiguous at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at, evil.
Yeah, no, she did
it was
devil.
Taken.
I'm at Anna Hosnier on Twitter. Twitter, yes.
Yes. And until next time, just what do we say?
Stay informed.
Stay just informed.
Keep being ambiguous. I don't know.
Keep being ambiguous.
We change it every time. But
keep learning.
Yeah. Just be skeptical and be informed and I don't know. Be okay. You're okay. And I'm just really, I feel so much more learned
keep
than I was before this episode
following
started.
Joey.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the, there if there's any advice you take from any podcast, keep following me on social media. Yeah. Don't unfollow.
Yeah. Anyways.
And if you find him in the streets,
follow me.
Yeah, follow him. Follow
but don't follow me to where I live. Cause like,
follow him home.
Yeah, follow me home.
Follow him everywhere
really,
he goes.
Really creep me out.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week.
Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.